Welcome to the meeting of the Capital Investment Conference Committee. We will do just a very quick walkthrough of highlights, not line by line, of some spreadsheet and language. Members of the Conference Committee have that in front of them. Members of the audience have it as well. On the first page, which is higher education, we'll begin there. I should say we ought to at least pause for a moment and think how far we've come, lest we think there continues to be disagreement about size of the bill. If we remember that when we first started this process, everyone all over the state said we have something like between $3 and $4 billion worth of requests for this bill, for us to be here together as House and Senate with an agreement on $925 million, we have come a long way. And even that had one more stage when both the House and Senate passed the bill, and then Senator Langfeth and I sat down for the first time and put those two bills together. We were, of course, again, over $1 billion, and so we have come a long way also from that level. Celebrating for just a minute that we have come a long way in that tailoring of a large number of requests into a bill that we have before us. On the spreadsheet, you will notice these are always painful, the asset preservation lines for both the University of Minnesota and MinSCU. It is always difficult to hang on to all that asset preservation. Those projects for the campuses are somehow so much more real, and you're saying no to a campus and a group of students. The Hennepin Technical College and Ridgewater College and Rochester Community and Technical College were not in the Senate bill, but those are now in the Conference Committee bill. Property acquisition, we are somewhere between the smaller number that the House had and the number that the Senate had on line 57. Under Department of Education, the House accepted two projects that were in the Senate bill, line 66 and 68 for Anoka and Osseo. Red Lake is half of the request, and we'll talk a little bit about the language in a bit. And library and accessibility and improvement grants, again, between the House and the Senate. On Minnesota State Academies, we ended up roughly with the same amount that the House had in its original bill, but we reallocated dollars so that all of those projects have some funding in the bill. I want to just emphasize on the Purpose Center for Arts Education, there is no backing away from that mission. We've had some very productive conversations with the director of that school, and I know at least in the House, Representative Greiling and I would like to continue that. We have some thoughts about where we might go in the future. Under DNR, the one item that was, of course, very important to the Senate was the flood hazard mitigation grants, and that is on both lines 98 and 101 for Browns Valley. And also, the Crookston project, the House saw that as flood mitigation. Here it is, though it is not, here, but under deed in the Conference Committee report. And though it looks like City of Stillwater flood control was zeroed out, that also appears at another point in the bill. Lines 122 and 123, as we tried to match the lines of both the House and the Senate bills, we finally thought it was simply going to be easier to combine those so that it looks as though we suddenly have come up with a very big increase on line 123. The State Park and Rec Area Rehabilitation up to $19 million. If you note what the House and the Senate have on both lines, 122 and 123, it's a combination of those items. Again, though, the spreadsheet shows a zero for line 127, Cuyuna Recreation Area. It does appear elsewhere in the bill. I believe we're going to shortly have Commissioner Hansen here, and we'll talk a little more about line 133, an item important to the governor, and the House had included it, And we could perhaps talk just a bit more about that with the commissioner. The House had a number of regional and local parks which we visited and which we believed was land that there was huge interest in, lines 137 to 140. Sort of as a nod to that, but unable to manage those large numbers, we have a small amount in for Ojikita and the City of Sartell. And for those of you who may not know, that Rice County Park acquisition, there is $1 million in the LCCMR bill, and so they are not forgotten this year, but just in another place. You will notice on lines 159 and following, though again it appears that nothing is in the Conference Committee report, in fact you will see some of those projects under the Met Council, as is line 170, Old Cedar Bridge. Line 180, we'll talk a little more about when we go through the language. That's the closed landfill program using revenue bonds intended, among other things, to solve a landfill issue that 3M is involved in. I will tell you that on line 190, I don't know that I've ever had a bonding project that has so directly made the sports pages. But sportsmen understand the importance of rim reserve in establishing wetlands and establishing habitat, and so there was attention to those particular lines, and we are coming in somewhere between House and Senate on that line. One project apparently was overlooked, and that's on line 208. The governor brought to our attention a seed potato inspection building in East Grand Forks. And so though that did not appear in the House and Senate, it is a governor's recommendation. As we have cut, there are very painful cuts. And under Minnesota Zoological Gardens, last year you may recall one of the emergency items was inflow and infiltration. And we wanted to single that out to say we have to be sure that there is sufficient money in asset preservation so that can be accommodated. Under administration, I know in the House we frequently looked at the agency priority ranking, and we took that seriously, and statewide CAPRA was their sixth priority. And their first priority was Department of Transportation Exterior, which was in the transportation bill, and we included both their second and third priority. We didn't get as far as six, but I believe we're hearing from the governor's office that may have more importance than we had anticipated. Amateur Sports Commission, as you can see, the Senate prevailed. Under Public Safety, as you can see, the Senate prevailed. And lest any of you wonder, as I did, about line 263, the NASA Public Safety Facility, it turns out that at one point there was a vehicle bill that the Senate used for their new 925, and it happened to be that vehicle bill. So that I had to catch up myself with.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Did you make it to NASA?
I didn't. We didn't. I don't think we... That is not something we...
Well, did you have been with us. A great day.
We'll try that again. under the Department of Transportation, line 274, the House had that in deed, and they have had an interest in that. That is St. Jude expanding on both sides of Highway 36, and significant over the next 10 years, something like 1,600 or 1,400 new jobs, and that is reflected in line 274. The Urban Partnership Agreement, you saw some of those lines in the transportation bill. They needed both trunk highway fund, they needed geobonding, they needed some cash. And so you see them on a number of lines. We tried to reflect the need that the Metropolitan Council had indicated. The rest of this has, among other things, Greater Minnesota Transit, Minnesota Valley Railroad, ports are here. I will tell you that the more I read the business pages these days, the more important I think line 287 is. AirTran has suspended flights from the Twin Cities to Chicago, And as you see, oil prices go up, and airlines, Champion? I do believe that one of the obligations we're going to have is more attention to intercity rail to provide alternatives to air transportation as the airline industry responds to that new economic impact. We build not just one corridor, but a system in this bill relative to transportation alternatives and public mass transit. On lines 307 to 316, you see, if I had my map here, you would see we cover the region, and we connect Duluth, and we connect Rochester. I should just point out, in the event you don't know, that Bottineau Boulevard is the old Northwest Busway. You'll see that in the cancellations. They're shifting from decision for bus rapid transit more in the direction of LRT, and they've renamed that corridor as well. So we have Bottineau, Cedar, Central, I-94 in Washington County, 494 Red Rock, Robert Street, Rush Line, Southwest, and then the Union Depot, which in the East Metro ties those corridors together. I would say lines, the Veterans Affairs Department, 355 and following, was one of the most difficult. First of all, because there are vastly different approaches, certainly between House and Senate, but also the governor. And even some who aren't on our committee who have begun to ask questions, and I would just name both a senator and a House member, Senator Berglund and Representative Heidgerken, both who have raised the question, should we begin to provide as an opportunity to have veterans opt for their community nursing home where they are able to stay closer to home. We have a shift from the Veterans Home Board to the Commissioner, and clearly there's going to be to need to be some time for that transition. I can tell you in Representative Junkie's bill, there is study language, and I think he actually funds that study, to say, let's look at the whole system of veterans' homes in a fresh new way. And then he also has study language specifically for the Minneapolis campus. I have lots of people in my office on behalf of that project. But when you add up the needs there, I think it approaches somewhere between $60 and $70 million. And it is a little scary to think about that big of an investment in the next few years. So I do think that there will be a little bit of introspection and conversation among those who care so much about this particular part of the bill, and that that we might have a little more clarity the next time around as we take a look at it. We've added on line 377 the Red Wing Vocational Building. On Public Facilities Authority, line 421 through 425, that I know for House members in Greater Minnesota particularly, that whole issue of wastewater infrastructure, the capitalization grants and wastewater infrastructure fund are extremely important, and we tried to keep those numbers up as high as we could, and we worked with the PFA staff in terms of deciding where we might best cut. You may recall, under Housing Finance Agency, we're taking a slightly different approach, and that is that $30 million in bonding. They use their bonding authority, and we were told that makes it a bit easier for them to work with nonprofits, that the geo bond rules and regulations have sometimes added to the cost, and using their own bonding authority with us picking up the debt service is a better approach to that. We do still include some money for emergency shelter and transitional housing. And then finally, you see on page 15, we have some cancellations. Lewis and Clark, some of these you saw in last year's bill. That is a project, a water project that goes over state boundaries, and geobonding wouldn't be able to be used in that case. So we have canceled bonds and replaced it with cash. I referenced earlier Bottineau Boulevard on line 477. That's the one that used to be called Northwest Busway, and they are potentially going in a new direction there. So some cancellations. And then, of course, on the last page, you see the total deal impact is just under 925, about as close to 925 as we could get it, and the total general fund impact of the conference committee report on line 516. Just a few references to language. The language we use for Red Lake on page 19, because we have only given partial funding, and because our House Education Committee has a real interest in seeing that project to conclusion, we indicate that the commissioner is to work with the district to determine how this capital loan will be used in order that we assure the completion of that project. The OSSEO language, by the way, which was in the Senate bill, I was interested in that language because there is a determination that we're going to all learn from this, that the school district must report to the Commissioner of Education on how the facility has improved student achievement and reduced educational disparities. And I think that has the potential to inform many of us on a potential new direction that we might go in education. Our House Education Committee was delighted that we had accepted that language from the Senate. I'm going to just reference a few pages if you are interested in geographic areas. For example, on pages 24 and 25, if you're interested in where the dam renovation and removal is, they are listed on page 25. And if you are interested in where the scientific and natural area acquisition and development, you can find those on page 29. On some of those, they're sort of hard to determine from the spreadsheet. You have in your packet a list of, I didn't reference it earlier, by the way, all the HEPA projects that are completed at $55 million for Minsky. You also have in your packet, this is where this handout is for, right? The DNR, Division of Parks, the new and deferred maintenance bondable projects, and with this amount, all of these projects that you see on both sides of that sheet can be completed. It again gives you just a sense of what we're going to be able to do for that amount. On page 32, again, some of those, a list of some of the projects completed under that section. And also, on pages 32 and 33, State Park Prairie Reconstruction and Forest Restoration at the top of 33, if you have an interest in where those projects happen, they are listed there. The closed landfill cleanup revenue bonds, the revenue bonds that I mentioned earlier, I believe using the remediation fund is a new approach, Ms. Dyson. Is that correct? So on page 38, you notice that is now from the bond proceeds account in the remediation fund. Again, on page 41, a list of some of the some of the areas where some of the RIM conservation money will be used. On page 50, the House had not included a lot of those regional training centers around the state, and Representative Tamar, Chair of Public Safety, had concerns about ongoing impact, and so though we have funded more of those than in the House bill, you will notice that we do include on page 50 and 51 some language that Representative Tamar had suggested, and that is we do an assessment of the state's crime lab needs. And we have a long-range plan for the training of state crime lab employees, including the possibility of sharing those costs across the state, that there would be a long-range funding plan for the operations so that we know what we're committing to, and also an assessment of the state crime lab's response times and specific recommendations. One of the things we heard was one reason there was pressure in other areas for a forensic laboratory was this, what they thought of as delayed response times, and we thought, well, we should know just how serious that is and what we ought to perhaps be doing about it. On page 58, we have, in a sense, just to acknowledge all of the transit corridors, we have included them all, but we know that the Met Council may, in fact, have different needs depending on the corridor. And so we provide that the Met Council may transfer the unencumbered balance in the project to any other transit project or to design and construct public infrastructure for the Fridley Station of the North Star Commuter Rail. That's something that after the signing of the full funding agreement was something that that they were seeking. And on page 76, again, at the suggestion of the Public Facilities Authority staff, we are lifting the caps under WIF for Litchfield and Wilmer. They have peculiar burdens there that the recommendation was that we help them in that way. And I think we did it in such a way that we don't necessarily hurt others on the list. And then finally, though it is often overlooked in media coverage of this bill, on the bottom of page 94 begins the section where we talk about biomedical science research funding to further the investment in biomedical science research facilities in Minnesota. And I do think that there are some opportunities to really celebrate, and I've suggested to the governor's office that this is one we can all celebrate together, that that here I think there will be national interest, and it allows us to I think the outcomes were new ways to prevent and cure disease, new technologies to commercialize, $120 million in new federal money annually for research, 4,800 permanent jobs, and it provides the opportunity to attract new venture capital investments to Minnesota and to retain Minnesota's position as a world leader in biotech. You may recall that we talked about being a little far down on the ranking list and wanting to recapture some of that standing. On page 98 is the language about the nonprofit housing fund, if that is of interest to you. And I believe you have in your packet a graph that looks like this. One of the things that was important to both the House and the Senate, and I know to the governor, is conscious attempt to say we do not intend to break this 3% debt service guideline that has served this state well. And so what you see on that graph is a demonstration of a $925 million bill with an assumption built in. And on page 117, section 75, is the following language. In calculating the debt service limits under the Department of Finance's guidelines, the Commissioner of Finance must assume that the bonding amount in future odd-numbered years will be at the same amount assumed in the budget forecast, and assume a bonding amount in future even-numbered years, an amount that will allow general fund debt service payments to meet the guidelines. And what you see here are numbers at 925 and that look into the future at a lower number. Not everyone is aware that when we compute that 3%, it isn't just this year that we look, but we really make some assumptions on into the future. And what we're saying is there is an argument to be made for a larger bill this year and then a somewhat lower bonding level in future years built into this. And I would say there are two arguments that suggest why that makes sense. One is in this economy, putting more people to work right now is a good thing. And so the jobs in this bill at as high a level as we're able are a good thing. But the other, and I know the governor has himself made this argument in the area of transportation, using today's dollars for construction and avoiding inflation in the future is also a good thing. And so if we're saying it may be a somewhat larger bill this year, but projecting a potentially smaller bill in the future, has the it keeps us within that 3% guideline and yet allows a more aggressive approach this year. That is a very quick summary of spreadsheet and language, and we are open to questions of members.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cornyn.
Madam Chair, I can't seem to locate the Cain or Rec area stuff in the bill here, and I've looked through it. About, can
we'll,
I have
we'll
somebody
have
direct
somebody
me?
Get that reference for you in just a minute. It's an important project to us, too, so we know it's there. Page 31. And then look at the spreadsheet. And then the spreadsheet on line 123, line 123 on the spreadsheet. Cuyuna is listed in that large amount, $19 million, about half the way down on page 31.
And then it's broken out. Madam Chair.
Yes.
It's broken out somewhere else.
And then the spreadsheet, oh, okay, here it is. On this one, on page 2 of this sheet, you'll see under, on lines 2 and 3, and on 21.
I must have had that.
Senator Coring needs one of these from his...
No, not that one.
Senator Coring, let me see, staff? Oh, is it in this one? We have a copy coming to you. On there, Cuyuna is on page 2, lines 2, 3, and 21. And then what line on the spreadsheet again? 123 on our spreadsheet.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Other questions? We invited Commissioner Hansen because we know this is a three-way conversation. It does require the House and Senate to come together, but it also requires us to engage the governor's office, and we wanted to... whatever you like.
I would move the bill.
Senator Langseth thinks maybe he wants to get the bill before us.
There was some question, too, on page 41 about some of the counties were listed. That was a House provision, but it was suggested that if you can list them, there's really four more to be listed. That has to do with the recipients for the RIM. Clearwater, Travis, Grant, and Stevens. I'm not sure just what the situation is for all of them. I know Grant is at the North Ottawa project, probably. Mr. Harnack, maybe could. Would you like to make a comment here? Or I think your comment is that either you don't think anything should be listed or those four should be listed along with it. It is a House provision,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been up to you. But.
Okay. Well, if there's. I mean, we're. If we can have this information, we'll figure out how to fix it somewhere along the line.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Harnack.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Ron Harnack for the Red River Watershed Management Board. The listing of counties that you have there, it refers to the Red River Valley, but it misses four counties. So the suggestion was is maybe to add those four counties that are not in there, because otherwise there's confusion over what is actually included. Or just leave out the counties altogether and just refer to the Red River Valley, which includes all the counties.
And Mr. Harnack, you do know that we start already on, we designate Southeast Minnesota, and then we, in other words, there are, it's not just that listing up here.
Madam Chair, I understand that. It's just that in that one provision where it says up to a certain amount for these counties, it doesn't include all the counties in the Red River Valley, which is, and I think the intent was is to include all the counties in the Red River Valley, not to limit them.
Well,
and there was four counties that were missing. That's the only point I was making.
Members, we would actually have to rewrite a conference committee report. Maybe we could look for other ways, another place to represent the community. I think we could think of this in a little bit different way, too, because not all of the $25 million is accounted for in the places that say up to. So many, many counties do not have, are not particularly listed. So there is a fair amount of money. I would have to add it up right now, but $15 million maybe, that
is non-designated.
It's non-designated. Therefore, those counties would be included in that larger amount.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And that's, yeah, out of $25 million, only, it looks like only $10 million is designated for that group.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think that's
a fair interpretation.
And did you say you wanted to vote before? Okay.
I move the conference committee report.
Senator Leisef would like to get the motion on the floor, and then we'll have a chance to visit with the governor's office. Was there further question or discussion about the conference committee report? Nothing? I don't see anything. All in favor of the conference committee report, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries, and the report is approved, and this is a logical time to hand off to the next branch of government. So, Commissioner Hansen, if you could join us. And one of the items you know was important to the House and was in the House bill, and which is important to the governor, is the issue of Vermillion. And we perhaps could just ask for an update about negotiations and timeline, and I think we're still unclear about the timeline and a firm number there. Would you say that's correct, Mr. Hansen? Commissioner Hansen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. If I just could ask a quick question, I'm remembering my parliamentary procedure back from my first day in the House days.
That means somebody has a cell phone.
I think it was.
I think Kathy Blair has problems.
I think we can all guess who it was. But you just—that's the final vote, and that you've just approved.
We have just approved the.
Do you still want to talk to me?
this is what this we engage you for. This is when you really count, and we have to pass this off to you.
You had questions regarding Vermillion and what the status of the negotiations are, and what the amount,
maybe timeline and
timeline.
We've been sort of guessing on the amount. In fact, we had a guesstimate in our bill, but whether there comes a time when we have some clarity about what the amount
sure.
is.
Well, and I can tell you what I know, and I don't know if Commissioner Holston or somebody from DNR is here to offer more, but we have been in negotiations with the owners of the land, and haven't come to a number yet, which in part makes it difficult working with this process. We want to be respectful to the legislature, but we also don't want to lay out what has been a delay is we also want to lay out the maximum amount that we're willing to pay. That's never good negotiating. There is, as you know, a acquisition of land component, and then there is a development component as well. And it is something that the governor announced last September and has been very supportive of ever since.
If maybe if any other questions or comment about this particular issue, and then we'll go on to other groups that we need.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hansen, I think you have identified the problem for us. It's not good for us to negotiate by putting a number in a bill when it's time for us to put a bill on the table, and it's difficult for us to move without something specific from the governor. Otherwise, we may be overestimating or underestimating. When we put the number into the House, we put the number in that was what we thought was fair purchase plus some development. But I also think you can do much better than that. And it is time, I think, that we hear from you about how much better you can do before we take the next step.
That's one item of interest, and we've had good conversations, I think, with the governor and the governor's staff, and obviously you haven't had a chance to see our bill until this moment, and so it will take some time before you have a sense of how acceptable this bill is and whether it's possible to move ahead with this bill, but we'll await with interest, and you're welcome to have the floor or respond to questions of the committee.
But I'm free to make some comments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you again. I think it would come as no surprise that the governor is concerned about the size of the bill. And as we all know and have talked about, the state has a 3% debt management limit. And it is a policy that has been here through the governors of three parties, through multiple commissioners of my predecessors who are some sitting in the audience. It is a calculation done by the professionals at the finance department, not by the political appointees. And it is something that we have abided by for a long time, for a couple of decades. This bill at $925 million exceeds that 3% debt management limit. As we have calculated it based on the February forecast, that limit is $885 million of bonds authorized in the 2008 legislative session. The legislature has chosen to authorize $60 million, so that would be leave available to you $825 million. The governor has said, and I don't think it's a surprise to the you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, of the conference committee, that he will not sign a bill exceeding $825 million.
Madam Chair, we started out, as you said, a $4 billion request. And I suppose if I was to calculate, and I don't mean this to be a snide remark towards the governor or anybody else, I have a great deal of respect, but if I was to add up all the projects that he said he supported, it would probably be about $3 billion anyway. And that's just the nature of the game. He's no different than any other governor I served under. In fact, that Rudy Perfect probably would have been at the $50 billion rate at that particular point. But we have some realism that's set in about right now. But we had $4 billion request, and it's been some real tough negotiations, some tough decisions that are made. People are disappointed. Good projects that make sense, that put people to work, are falling by the wayside with this. And Commissioner, I'm equally concerned about the 3%. And I've looked at the calculations and I've had conversations with you about those as well. But if you look at the chart that's here, what's always frustrated me a little bit is when I suppose they're professionals or whatever you want to call them in the department. I think they're a very good in state employees. But when they take the 885 that you've calculated and spread that forward, but then go back to 10 years, and you look at the forecast numbers, we always take a look at the average of the 10 years back for that. And then when you bring a forecast, you bring that forward 10 years. And I think if you look at the page 117, and I have shared those particularly numbers with or this language with you earlier.
I
appreciate you looking at them. I think what we're saying to the department is that at this particular time we're following the 3% guideline that the governor has laid out. And I know that I also shared with you some additional language that you were interested in, and you said you were going to do it, so we didn't put it in here anyway. But and I want you to confirm that, and that was that we need to have some kind of an intelligent discussion whether or not that's the right guidelines, and how we calculate that guidelines is right. We had testimony from other people who are very knowledgeable, much more knowledgeable than I am, that the guideline of 2.3 or 2.5% of personal income is much better than that guideline. And you do that, you include all of the debt obligations that are included in such as transportation. In talking with and having some reports from the NCSL, National Conference of State Legislators, I think we're the only one that have this particular guideline in our facilities, and most of them have the other guidelines. And I appreciate very much your wanting to study this in the future. But I think that with that language that's included in it, we are assuring the governor that we're not going to go over his self-imposed 3% guideline. And if I'm mistaken on that, I stand corrected, but I think that's what the language says. This chart kind of says that. We've taken $4 billion and made some real tough choices and brought it down to within those guidelines. Your reaction to the language that's in on page 117 and my concerns.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I do recognize the language, and this is a ongoing discussion that you and I have had at some length throughout this session.
I think we agreed on some of it.
The difference between where you have been and where the debt management guideline is the assumption of what the bills will be in the future. Mm-hmm. Under your calculation, you are taking the standard right now. It's $645 million, which is what we assume in the forecast, and that's the agreement that the Department of Finance has come up with the House and the Senate on calculating cash debt in the forecast. So you're assuming that every bill in the future for the calculation is going to be $645 million. The way the policy has been interpreted and managed long before I have been there is that when you hit whatever the 3% guideline is, in this case 885, that's the level that it continues forward. So the difference, I would say, is it's more reasonable to assume that the bill is going to stay at an 885 level than it is for, you said yourself, difficult priorities. Then it's going to be $645 million 2 years from now.
Well, Madam Chair, and I don't want to prolong this conversation, but the assumptions of that the economy will, you tell me what the economy is going to be like 10 years from now. And you and I, if we could do that, we wouldn't be sitting here, obviously. But the assumption isn't 645. The assumption is, as I understand it, is going back the same way that finance has done in the past to arrive at 645. to go 10 years back and get that 10-year average, and you bring that forward. That's what you did in the forecast when you brought that forward. And this, I think, is assuming that same type of thing. We didn't take $1 billion from a couple of years ago and put $1 billion out the rest of the way. I don't think the finance did. I might be mistaken on that, but I don't think that's the case. Nor would we take 885 and assume that that's going to be the case. But we are assuming in this particular case, we do 925 with in this bill, plus we're counting the 60 that's in the other. Your forecast going back, including this, is at the 775 level. So that's, I believe, is the assumption. Now, I don't want to prolong this particular discussion, but I just want to make a stress point that we're taking the governor seriously on the 3%, and we'll have a difference of opinion on how you arrive at that.
I think we've probably never discussed the 3% as much as we have this year, and it probably gets at the heart of our what is now really a small difference of opinion between the governor and this bill. We frequently are asked to be interviewed on this issue, and one was just as recent as today when a Duluth television station wanted me to come out and talk about the 3%. I gave her this long explanation and talked about the graph and everything. And when I finished, she said, "Now, could you do that again and just do it like in one or two sentences that I could?" And that is the challenge. I mean, for the public, they seem to understand that this has become the issue, and they're all struggling to understand it, and it does confound people. Senator Langton.
Madam Chair, well, I have been involved with these bonding issues for a long time, and I am very confused about the administration figuring. You know, last year we were told that we were allowed $135 million last year and $970 million this year. That's $1.105 billion. We only did $57 million last year, of which about $1 million has been sold. There was over $78 million left on the table. But yet, when it came to the November forecast, which was down just a little bit, the combination of the 78 plus the 970 became 965. So all of a sudden, we lose about $83 million. Then when it came to the February forecast, which was down some again, but not drastically, all of a sudden it dropped another $80 million. So I am very baffled by it, and I stood by my prediction that if we pass 925, it'll never hit the 3%, and of course, if we're ever in danger, the administration could just wait a little while for to sell some bonds. But I really do question the figures that I have heard the last year.
Commissioner Hanson.
Madam Chair, Senator Langseth, the 3% debt calculation, it's 3% of the general fund. And while when we recalculated the general fund in the November forecast, you then make projections going forward. So revenue changes. We have lost a lot of revenue since the February forecast of 2007. So even though the November 2007 forecast, I think it did, was a big change, but that is magnified because you lose money in fiscal 08, fiscal 09, and then 10 and 11, and then for the purposes of this calculation, we go out three biennium, up to 2017. So it, as time goes on, it just magnifies itself and diverges. That's why I think you saw the difference from February to it's recalculated at every forecast.
Well, Madam Chair, we've been told certain things in the past too, and then you see what gets spent, and it's considerably below the 3%. I think the previous biennium was 9.36, wasn't it? And now this one is
2.36,
and then this biennium, we're talking about 2.6 to 2.7, somewhere in that range. So we're always come out considerably below. And my prediction is if we went with your numbers, we would be considerably below in the future. And, you know, I did take third grade math, and it just doesn't figure out for me what your administration is saying.
You took higher than third grade math from my calculation.
No, but I knew by the third grade that you're wrong.
It took me to see this.
He anticipated he would know you someday, and you would be wrong.
Glendon has a better high school than you. Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Langstedt, just so we're talking about numbers, as I calculate your bonding bill, it's 900. As I looked on the sheets, 925, but then the legislature authorized 60. So you're at $985 million, and then by the calculation of the 3% debt limit, the University of Minnesota's Bioscience Authority adds another $233. This is really a $1.2 billion bonding bill rather than the $925.
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond to that. You know, when we built this facility for football, which I don't know how many games there are yet, the administration didn't feel they needed to count that. Now when we get into things like biomedical science, I mean, probably the most important thing we could possibly be involved in, now all of a sudden we have to count it. And I guess I would like to know the logic of the administration who feels that a football stadium is far more important than medical research. That puzzles me.
Madam Chair, Senator Langstedt, the governor does support, as you and I have talked about before, the Bioscience Authority. I think the $100 million for the stadium should have been counted. We have offered have discussed with the university as well as members of the conference committee the compromise of doing the $233 million, not counting the first 40. Recognizing your argument, giving you a nod, and then the buildings and the three buildings in the future would be counted under the 3% debt limit. The important thing to remember is we're managing debt in the general fund. The more you pay out of debt in the general fund, the less that's available for K-12 for other priorities. And when you sell bonds, these are you're paying debt service into the future, so you're making some fairly important decisions. We feel strongly that our compromise should have been considered.
Madam Chair, I think it's a little strange, you know, the way this is being done on the fly, that, well, we don't need to count the first one or the stadium, but now we need to count the other three. And you know, the logic of all that really escapes me. It just seems like it's done in a way to try to hold things down. And
Madam Chair, yes, Senator Langstedt, it's one thing to do a one-time $100 million bond project. And that's one issue, but the university came forward with a multi-year commitment. I mean, a project that we, many, if not all of us, support, but it's over multiple years authorizing bonds over a long period of time. That is a big step from just one individual project at one time where we're paying general fund debt service out.
Representative Wigginia?
Thank you, Commissioner. I think you hear that frustration, don't you? And
well, I knew it was here already.
So if you were problem solving and said, well, I'm going to stick to my guns, then I think it's incumbent on you to let us know which of the projects that we have included in this bonding bill that you would cut.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I did just see this ahead of time, but off the cuff, I did notice that the governor's priorities for the Veterans Home Board, and in particular the new veterans facility in Minneapolis to house our veterans, was omitted from the bonding bill, but I also noticed a lot of local projects. So my first comment would be, questioning some of the priorities that you've established wouldn't necessarily be the ones we would establish.
But
Representative Union.
I think you just said the first thing you said was, I want to add. I had asked about tracking. And so you've just told us you wanted to add another thing to this bonding bill while telling us that what we need to do is subtract. I think Representative Houseman gave you a very good reason why the veterans was different than you might have expected. I mean, I think this for her long-term planning and thinking is on the money. Help us again with what specifically you would touch.
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunias, as I said, I received this as I was walking in. So other than the overall amount and some of the particulars that the two chairs have discussed over the past few days, I think the governor's, I think that after we reached a certain point in the discussions, your two bodies went ahead and put the bill together and without any input from our office, from the governor's office, or from the Department of Finance. So we will accept your recommendations and let you know within the required constitutional 3 days what the governor will do.
We are inviting right now to continue the conversation and would specifically like to know what you think should not be in this bill to get down to the number that you would like.
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunias, does that mean that once I go through this, you're going to undo your motion? I think your motion before I even got up here specified what it was you had planned on doing and before you heard from me.
Madam Chair.
Is it to this point? Otherwise, I have another member for
Madam Chair. I think that Commissioner Hansen is a very nice guy, and I don't think it's fair for us to put him on the spot to ask him what the governor wants to take out of it. I think we will find out in 3 days what he wants to do, and I just don't think it's fair to be putting the commissioner on the spot, and I don't like it very much.
Were you finished with your point? Well, if by 3 days you're implying that he'll just veto the whole thing, we won't get anything. I think the specific thing we need to know is what in here is not suitable. And you heard Representative Houseman go over the bill, and we're all quick reads here. We have to be. So, and I bet there's everyone who's sitting here with us has digested this already. So I'll try one more time. Help us out. What project should not be here?
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunias, and I will say one more time that I didn't get this till I came in. We, after discussions, hard-working discussions over the size of the bill and legitimate differences, we just disagree. So, and it's legitimate philosophical differences about the size of the bill and the needs and what are the needs. And you went ahead and put your bill together, and we respect that. And you exercised your prerogatives. And as the two chairs communicated to the governor what they were going to do, and we communicated back, we'll exercise ours. Now, I'm not going to do it. Yes, I could probably, off the top of my head, come up with a few. But I'm not going to do it right here and right now.
Madam Chair, I want to follow through a little bit on the conversation Senator Lanks has had about the University of Minnesota. There's one thing to have a one-time situation of a football stadium, to be able to say that was an exception. But I would agree with Senator Lanks on the need to have a long-term strategy for the University of Minnesota on bioscience. And I think this comes in with it within their parameters as well. But I want to remind the commissioner, I think you were in a different role at the time. In fact, as you were probably sitting and was one of the staff people around here or in the corner office up there, when the same type of procedure to violate what was then the 3% rule was done with the Freeman and the Anderson building. I think I got them right. Those were bonds issued by the St. Paul Port Authority, but we're paying the bonds off. with the contract. We have the same type of situation with the BCA building in Bemidji. So this isn't something new. And I was one who, along with the Representative Carlson, had 2 or 3 years of conversation with the University of Minnesota and did not support their first proposal over their objection. But I have come to the conclusion that this is a fair proposal. It puts the legislature still in charge of it. And it also, I think, sends the right signal that if we're going to have a system in the state of Minnesota that supports research and development, supports long-term job growth, that we need to have this kind of a facility on the table, ready to go, in phases, to be able to attract the type of researchers we want. We're going to grow the next Medtronic. We're going to grow the next type of facility that deals with curing Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's that I got. I want them to do it now and or put the process in place to be able to do that. So I became a strong supporter of it. And we're going to look at precedents. All we have to do is look at what happened with the Anderson building, the Freeman building. We're paying for those out of a similarity to what was done with the stadium.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, that is another classic example of getting around the 3% debt limit. That it's those type of things we have to manage.
Well, Madam Chair, and they are manageable, and that's exactly what my contention is.
Yeah.
With that, it's upfront. We know what we're doing. We're talking about it. It's not just underneath the table, and it's the right thing to do.
Madam Chair, I'm told that Commissioner Holston was going to try to come and for somebody from DNR to answer some of Representative Wagenius's questions. I don't know if they've arrived.
Madam Chair, welcome. Senator Langston, members of the conference committee. My name is Kathleen Anderson, and I'm the Legislative Affairs Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. We have put a call into Commissioner Holston. He is in a meeting, and I have requested that Assistant Commissioner Meyer come. He is breaking from his meeting to join us. Thank you.
There you go.
Welcome to the conference committee.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
We began by saying the House had Vermillion, which we know is important to the governor, in the bill. We did just somewhat guess because we're too early in the process to have a negotiated agreement. So we were sort of asking about advice about timing and specificity of amounts.
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. We've been negotiating with United States Steel now ongoing for several months very actively. Where we're at in the process is we've done our independent appraisal. United States Steel has done their appraisal as well. We're negotiating the price based off of two numbers, which are both private data based upon the landowner's Bill of Rights. I think there's been numbers floated around in this body about $13.4 million, which is the 2007 St. Louis County tax assessor's valuation of the land as it sits right now, undeveloped. That's the amount of money that they are paying property taxes on at this point in time.
13.4
is 13.4. What St. Louis County has the property valued at this day, well, 2007 payable for the property taxes that are paid. Now that's just raw land, but that's the number St. Louis County is using and United States Steel is paying property taxes on. As I said, our appraisal came in at one number. United States Steel's appraisal came at a different number. We've been involved in some very complex negotiations with the parties. Commissioner Holston has been involved directly. Marty Vadas, our Director of Lands and Minerals, is leading our negotiations process from our department. We've had several meetings. We anticipate another personal meeting here in the coming weeks to try to finalize that number. Our agreement with United States Steel initially that we entered into last summer gave us until March 15th to come up with a negotiated price. We've extended that deadline by 60 days. So now we have until, I guess that would be May 15th, to come up with that negotiated price. I'm not sure of those exact dates, but we've extended it to about the same time as session is over to come up with that negotiated agreement. Madam Chair, members, I wish I could give you a number right now. I think Commissioner Hansen has spoke of kind of flushing your cards before the deal's done. We need to maintain flexibility to get the best value for the state on this property. Well, also, it is the administration's position to achieve development dollars as well, to put this land into development so it will be usable and open to the public again for all citizens of the state of Minnesota.
Well, just two things. There's already existing a whole bunch of land that has never been developed. That's a park. It's already lakeshore land, and it's already built. But, and I'm a supporter of it, I think. I'm neutral on it, at the very least. But the question is, and I know this is a difficult thing to answer. You gave us the number of 13.4 of what the assessed value is. But in any negotiations, particularly with a large company such as U.S. Steel, in that negotiations, I guess, and if I ask a question that is inappropriate, that would interfere with those negotiations, please say so. But in that negotiations, are you also considering the tax benefit that U.S. Steel would get for a donation to the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I have been kept at arm's length from the negotiation process. Just
I've been kept miles away.
So I can honestly say I do not know, and I do not know the answer to that, Madam Chair, Representative Solberg. All I can say is we're working off of our appraisals and through the negotiation process in that process. There are a number of things people can put on the table to make a deal happen in this institution. I'm not aware of any of those right now, but I know we are looking at any and all options that are available to us to get the best value for the state.
Senator Torrey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner Meyer, has the department had any conversations with St. Louis County, because they're going to lose a lot of revenue? I would imagine that the DNR will be paying them payment in lieu of taxes. Is that correct? That if this happens to come together?
Madam Chair, Senator Corrine, yes, we have actually our task force, the Citizens Task Force that we've established, and the report is up on our website, does talk about those benefits. We've done a study based upon some 2001 data that we had. It'd be probably $7 to $10 million of income that the area would achieve based upon those types of numbers we had back then on the usership we're projecting. I believe also Senator Bach is looking at, in his tax bill, some shift to the PILT payments for this project as well. That would provide payment to the township and also the school board, I should say.
And
school board.
Senator Corrine.
And Madam Chair, if I could just say one other thing. I would just like to be on record as not supporting this project. I think the DNR has got a lot of land, and I think that they're having trouble managing it now. And so I think it's just going to be more land that is going to be, it's going to, we need to just take care of the state parks and what we have now. And I just think, I think this would be better to be developed myself. So I just want to be on record as that. I know that's not, probably not the wisest thing for a Republican to say, but I might not be coming back in 2 years, so I really don't care.
Madam Chair, just I guess one final comment. I don't necessarily expect a comment from you, Mr. Hansen, but the Governor's Housing Finance Agency came up with a plan very much like the University of Minnesota plan and the stadium, and he supports that, and it's in the bill. So again, I say, it kind of seems like he's setting the rules one way for certain things and then another way for what I consider to be the most important thing they could do. So that is in the bill, and it was his recommendation, so I just mentioned that. Okay.
And I think it would be fair in concluding comments to say we all agree with a responsible level of borrowing and how to do the math.
to get that is perhaps where we disagree. But I do know there was some agreement when we were talking about language with the governor and Commissioner Hansen. Our finance people had drafted various sentences, including the one that's in the bill, and one of them was a recommendation. And it said, the Commissioner of Finance must reevaluate the state debt service guidelines and report back to the legislature on recommendations for any revisions in the guidelines. In reevaluating the guidelines, the Commissioner must consult with credit rating agencies and bond counsel and must also review debt service guidelines used in other states. And Commissioner Hansen, as I recall, said you, in fact, are intending to do some of this work to take a look at these guidelines, and not necessarily with that specificity. So we thought not mandating that was probably a good idea, and giving some freedom to pursue that reevaluation in some way. And I don't know if you want to comment on that, but it sounded as though you are open to that idea of taking a look at this and seeing, can we get something that we can tell the media in one or two sentences that the public can understand and that we can actually have an agreement around?
Well, Madam Chair, I think we can start by looking at the Glendon Elementary School third grade math book and go from there. No,
That would help.
Yeah. I think it's, in light of all the discussion we've had this year, I think it's important that we all understand how we calculate this and what the implications are of how we calculate it. And for that reason, I think it's important that we take a look at this.
And to encourage us all to work together as good partners in the next, in the coming weeks, though I don't have the Moody's page in front of me, but you've heard me read it at some committees, there are lots of things Moody's looks at. One of them what is our debt service ratio, and in one of their evaluations they said, in fact, all the good things about us, that we do have a low debt service ratio, that we do have a healthy demographic and diversified industry and many positive things about Minnesota. But then they said, and this is also a consideration when they look at how we work together to determine, are we credit worthy? And it is, how do we do business, and can we reach across all of these boundaries without partisan gridlock and come together and make good decisions? And even Moody's watches us in that regard, and so we'll bring a spirit of that to the table, and that too will get us a good good look from the credit rating agencies. I think there are no more questions, so thanks so much. And it's a three-way partnership here, and we wanted to acknowledge that in this room today. And Jenny Nash has just listed the copies. There are three copies that must be signed by all conference committee members, if you are willing to do that. We took the vote, but that is really the official thing, the signature on the conference committee report. I don't see any further questions, comments. Representative Tableson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just talk about timeline? I think this is going to be on the floor tomorrow.
This is on the floor tomorrow in both the House and the Senate. Yes, so conference committee members will adjourn, but if you would please sign before you leave the room. Meeting is adjourned.